I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Stu and Blake.
Hello. Before we start this episode of the MMA Fan Podcast, we need to tell you about our sponsor, Free Train. Free Train do these fantastic running vests for you to run in, hit the bag in, and they keep your phone close to your chest. No more do you need to have your phone rumbling around in your pocket when you run or at an awkward angle on your arm. You can keep it on your chest with easy access to your phone whenever you go training. And what can the people do, Stu, if they want to get a vest?
Simple. Head over to www.freetrain.com. Have a look. See what you like. And when you pop it in the basket, just before you check out, pop in the code MMA fan and save yourself 10%. I mean, don't ever let it be said we don't spoil you here on this podcast. www.freetrain.com. Go check them out.
Excellent stuff. Right, on with the show. Sorry again, guys. We're going to briefly interrupt the podcast to tell you about a new movie called Embattled. Embattled is starring Stephen Dorff. It's written by David McKenna, who wrote American History X and Blow. You will also see cameos from Tyrone Woodley and Kenny Florian in this film. And it's the story of a tumultuous relationship between a father and his son. And did I mention that both father and son are MMA fighters? So this could be right up your street. It's available from the 5th of July on digital download. Check it out.
Hello and welcome to the MMA Fan Podcast. I'm Stu with Finn, one half of your presenting duo. Joining me as ever, Blake Harrison. Hello.
Hi, mate. How you doing?
I'm all right. I feel that we might have peaked already on this episode and we've not even started because it's the pre-show, so we've got the full gang. Welcome, Brian Lacey, Scribius Pip.
Hello.
Nice to be here.
So to give you some sort of context as to what's just happened is Blake and I recorded with Tyrone Woodley last week, and it was amazing to get to speak to Tyrone. But when he popped up on Zoom, he had his shirt off and was in space, which looked quite surreal, didn't it?
It was incredibly surreal. I mean, he looks good. He's clearly training hard for Jake Paul. He looks very, very good. Yeah. But it was surreal. It was weird to see Woodley up in space.
Yeah. It wasn't quite as surreal as seeing Brian Lacey and Scroobius Pip join the Zoom meeting shirtless in space.
Yeah, the solar,
I'm not quite in camp.
The solar rays were reflecting far more off of their skin than it was off of Woodley's, for sure.
Yeah, we're glowing. Yeah. The best part is, Stu, you know I'm always early. I was ready at 7 o'clock. I waited for 2 minutes to make sure everyone was in. You've got to work to an audience.
I waited for a minute. Damn you, Pip. Damn you. It was brilliant, though, when you popped in.
I was happy because mine came up as a picture first. So I saw you and I got to know, oh, I get to do the reveal now.
Smashed it. It's like when you do a gig, a comedy gig, the green room is generally the best work happens backstage. Yeah. I think that's just happened off there.
As it should be.
Well, it's great to have you back, both of you. Thank you very much. And for this show, obviously, we're looking ahead to this weekend. Card UFC 264, McGregor Poirier 3. So the idea that we thought would be a good way to kind of kick this off was, well, I say we, Blake had an idea that we all choose a fight from the prelims. It felt like
the prelims and the early prelims were relatively stacked, and we didn't want to bore people by talking about 20 fights.
We or you?
Well, you know, potato, potato. But I was thinking it would be a good idea for everyone to pick one fight off of the... Because we'll do the main card, obviously. But I thought it would be good for everyone to pick one fight off of the prelims or early prelims that they wanted us all to talk about. I thought that would be a good idea. So that the, you know, the listeners can just listen to those kind of exciting fights and then obviously the main card.
Yeah, I thought it was a great idea, and when we, you know, we all choose our fights, and I think we've all done that. And so, how you been getting on with it anyway this week, Blake?
Well, you know, given that it was my idea, I picked Sean Brady against Kevin Lee, which fell through, and I did know about that a few days ago, and I've been a little bit busy with just some stuff, yeah. And I didn't pick another fight. It's just, you know, I've not quite done that.
I mean, so, that's perfectly understandable, providing you did a load of research on Kevin Lee v. Sean Brady already, right, before it fell through.
Oh, yeah,
you were stacked,
man.
You did all of that, right?
Oh, big time. When that's rescheduled, just come straight to me, because I'm all the Brady Lee. Yeah, Brady Lee. I've got loads of that, mate. Loads of it. Just, it's sat here on the, I don't know if you can see, it's not a visual medium, but it's all on the screen there, Brady and Lee. Loads of it. Loads. Five pages just on that. Yeah.
Good stuff. So that goes out the window. So how are we going to do this now? We're just going to start with the prelims and have a chat?
Nah, let's pick what other people wanted to do. So, you know, what was your pick, Pip?
My pick was one that I think all of us would have been furious if we didn't get to talk about, because it's someone we've talked about a lot. It's Ryan Hall against Ilya Topuria. And Ryan Hall is just an event, isn't he? He's destination viewing. You tune in for Ryan Hall. I remember... The first one I remember seeing him, I think I must have watched him on Tough, but seeing him in front of a crowd against Gray Maynard, and every time Gray would push towards him, he'd just kind of go limp and fall to the ground. And Gray was getting annoyed because he was like, how do you counter that? But he was rolling for leg locks, and he won, and he was amazing. And me and my brother were watching that, just eyes locked on the TV, just amazed. And as soon as it finished, I went on Twitter. I was like, people are going to be loving this. Everyone was hating it. It was that early days of Machida vibe, like when Machida first came about and he was fighting Tito, and everyone was like, he's not a fighter, he's avoiding fighting. And then they fell in love with the technique, and that was it on Ryan Hall. And I think he's amazing. But as has also been talked about, he's not someone that people want to fight, because he'll either snap your leg or make you look stupid most of the time, and neither of those are good results. So he's not fought till since 2019. His opponent has had half of his career since Ryan Hall last fought. He's had four fights since 2019. He's 8-0. He's looked amazing in his two in the UFC. He came in the UFC in the pandemic, so he had two quite a quick succession ones and looked good. But I can't just look past my excitement to see Ryan Hall in there again.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm a huge Ryan Hall fan. He's so... Because what he did recently as well, and I feel like I only really saw... Was it Darren Elkins he fought last?
Yeah.
And because before that, it was all the Imanari rolls and going for those leg locks and all that, which is interesting enough as it is. But now he's got this kind of weird... karate style where he's throwing loads of spinning kicks, and he caught Elkins with a couple of those spinning kicks. It's
all he throws
ridiculous.
As well. It's like he's just bought the UFC game and he hasn't learned about stamina and he's building up the damage. He's just like spin kick, wicked. But it's brilliant. It's really engaging.
It's so exciting. No one fights like him. Yeah. On the feet, he's just, if you're in kicking range, he's going to spinning kick you.
Or looks or acts like him. Like, again, it looks like he's in the office every time. It looks like he's doing a gym look to camera in the office every time he's in a post-fight interview or whatever else. He's a legend. I love him.
I remember watching him on Tough. That was how I kind of got into Ryan Hall, was remembering that Ultimate Fighter series. And I always gravitate towards the fighters that don't seem like fighters. Like, he's got no tattoos. Yeah. He's got a hairy, undefined chest.
Everything. He's just... Everything. He keeps it all. The armpits, he doesn't shave a thing. He's got it all. I believe in
that. Yeah, and he's so nonchalant. Like, when he wins, he just shrugs. His celebration is to shrug and go, I won. And that's it. It's brilliant. I absolutely love him.
Yeah, he's the best. He's got that feeling of like Rory McDonald, where you're just like, if he wasn't doing MMA, he would be doing accounts. Or something like that. And I joked about that to mates. And then when I had Rory on my podcast a while back, when he was off injured, I was like, it's what I've been up to. And he's like, I've got really into stocks and shares. I'm really enjoying trading. And I was like, I was joking when I said that, but you genuinely would just be doing working in an office. But you've got to love that.
It was I watched the Elkins fight back today, which I'd forgotten how good it was. And just the whole demeanour of... Ryan Hall is like, he doesn't have fancy footwork. He literally just walks. Yes. And if you get close to him, he just drops and he'll try and grab something. But then when you add to that, in that camp, he added Raymond Daniels for striking, and Kenny Florian, your mate, lads, has been a big influence on all of his mixed martial arts game. Mix that with the sprinkling of the genius of Farasahabi on top of that. Yeah. And he's dangerously underrated, I think, because of his demeanour, because he doesn't fight that often. He's only fought once every year. He missed that 2017.
It stunned me to see he wasn't ranked, but it's because of inactivity.
Yeah.
And again, it's like he had two fights lined up against Ricardo Lamas. He had Dan Ige lined up, and they just fall through and fall through. And it's never really explained why. But, there's always been talk for a long time that people just don't... He's not someone you want to be matched up with.
No, because those heel hooks and knee bars and all that stuff, I mean, you probably know more about this than me, Pip, but it's like when they lock on, once it hurts, it's too late. That's an injury that can keep you out of the game for a long time. So I suppose if you are thinking, I've got to fight this guy, and if he locks something up, even if it's not locked up properly, or even if it's not hurting me and I don't want to tap, I probably should tap, because otherwise I might not be able to fight for a year afterwards because of the damage that he might do to my knee or my heel or wherever it is.
And again, he's got a different demeanour to Pal Harris, who was the original in the UFC leg locker, who was... He had a really... he's been deemed a cheat. I don't think he's particularly cheap. He just had a rough upbringing. So he was very much... go out there and do what I've got to do until I'm literally pulled off of them. And he got dropped essentially from the UFC, not for losing, for injuring people. And that was the first exposure that the UFC had majorly to heel hooks. And it was this monster of a guy who couldn't look any further from
Ryan Hall.
Ryan Hall.
Imagine again, if he was fighting him technique. And you knew how famous he was for just not releasing them locks. And then you looked up and Herb Dean was reffing. Fuck, mate. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
That wouldn't be fun.
I'd tap out at the weigh-ins. Nah.
We're only putting the Vaseline on, mate. What's getting on done? I'm done.
Right. Brian, do you want to pick a fight from the prelims?
Well, can I just say, we have fanboyed over Ryan Hall. Not one of us has mentioned Ilia Topuria.
No, exactly.
He's 10-0.
And he looked amazing.
He's looked amazing. And you could argue that if you're building a fighter to deal with a Ryan Hall, someone that's had a huge amount of submission victories early in their career, is now fantastic at boxing, so can close down, avoid the kicking range and go into boxing, and is clearly, I would argue, stronger and more powerful, more explosive than Ryan Hall, Ilia Topuria is your guy, and he's 10-0. So how much of a chance does he have against Ryan Hall?
I think it's hard to say because we've not... because of the uniqueness of Ryan Hall, it's got that kind of feel of an Anderson Silva or everyone always says with Machida, until you're in there. And Ronda had it as well for a long time. Until you're in there, you can't prepare for it. So... as fans, we can't either. But I think Ryan is going to have to spend a lot of time fighting absolute killer prospects, because the people above him have got a ranking, and everyone, it's that weird thing of everyone wants to fight someone above them, but yeah. That literally isn't possible because that's just how numbers
work.
But it does. It feels like he's going to have a lot of this, and it might kind of ruin our excitement and hope for his career or title runs. Because as said, he could lose this. He could lose at the weekend easily. You know, this is a really good guy, and it would be dismissed as he's lost against a nobody at this stage. Again, depending on what they go on to do, the kind of the McGregor Holloway effect. Of,
yes,
he beat Max, and I was like, all right, it's a middling opponent. And now you look at his record; he's like, oh my god, look at who he beat.
Absolutely. But yeah, so, tough one. Moving on to your pick, Bri, what have you gone for?
So I've gone, and I said that in the little group we got, I've gone for us to try and predict the two most unpredictable fighters in the UFC, Nico Price and Michelle Pereira. What a fight. What a fight. Price is just tough. He's game. Pereira is white. He's massive to start with, which is ridiculous for that weight class, 170. And I think that will cause Price problems because Price will get in a fight. He does get hit. He does get caught. He does get hurt. And it's just a wild fight when they put it together as these two going head to head. It's nothing but fun. There's going to be no stalling against the cage. There's going to be no lay and pray. It's going to be absolute war between the two. And crazy thing is, I think Pereira looks more unpredictable, but I think he's actually technically a better striker than Nico Price. So I think that might cause Price's toughness might cause him problems against the sort of the crazy, the wild strikes of Pereira. So I can't see this. Don't see it going the distance. I see there's a lot of blood on the canvas early on, and I just see it being fun.
I mean, how better can you sell a fight than that?
That's it. I mean, it is. This has got to be front runner for fight of the night, hasn't it? I mean, for as long as it may last. And the one reason I think it could last for quite a while, actually, is Nico Price is so durable. Like, if you go back and watch Tim Means fight, like, he was taking punches. Like 90% of the strikes thrown by Tim Means seemed to land. Nico Price was just taking them. Then all of a sudden comes up with a big right hand and knocks him out and wins the fight. And and even the Cerrone fight as well. That was so back and forth, and he was taking so many strikes that his durability could play a huge factor in this lasting longer. Because I think Pereira will be so much harder to hit than Nico Price. Pereira's footwork is so good. And what he's done lately as well, after I can't remember the guy that he fought where he gassed out after like less than a round and then ended
getting completely. It was like didn't he after trying to do a big flip and stuff.
It was like Timothy someone, but I can't remember. Tristan Connolly, that's the one. And then obviously the Diego Sanchez fight was a weird kind of disqualification situation. And since then he seems to have gone, okay, all the running up the cage, the fans love it, I love it, but it's harder to get the wins that way. It's more easier for me to kind of gas out. And lately I feel like he puts some of that stuff together, but he does it intermittently and he does it sparingly, and it still makes him exciting, but he's not gassing himself out, and his front kicks to the body are lethal. He moves in and out so well. I think he's going to be really hard to hit, and I think his size is going to be a big factor as well. I think Michelle's going to win this one.
I think he's done similar to what we saw with Gaethje, where Gaethje weaponized his violence and turned it into sport violence rather than just Gaethje violence. Pereira's weaponized his craziness and turned it into sport craziness and using it, as you said, in the right moments, in the right way. And moments is the key word. I think whether or not it will be fight of the night, there's going to be the moment of the night in one of these two prelims that we've just discussed, because that weird shit happens with these fighters in there. And now Diego's gone. These are the two in the UFC that you're guaranteed that something weird is going to happen in Pereira and in Hall.
Found other ways of entertaining the fans as well. I mean, that Imadaev fight where he's kissing his hand with it open and showing it to him again. Come on in. And then he slaps him around the face with it. And you're like, the disrespect is so bad. But he just does it. And then what he does as well that is so brilliant is he will throw in the odd cheeky takedown when you're not expecting it. I mean, he absolutely ragdolled Imadaev at the end of that fight. I know he kind of caught him in a weird kind of scramble on the feet and then just belly to back suplexed him like he was Ken Shamrock in a WWF or something. Yeah. And then I think in... who's his Chaos Williams fight? He threw in a couple of takedowns as well. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, that is clever because you're preparing for a guy that runs up the walls and backflip kicks you and all this stuff. And then all of a sudden you're on your back going, hang on a minute, why is he shooting for a takedown now? And it just opens up other avenues. It's so clever. And I think you're hard pushed to find a more exciting fighter on the roster, on the entire UFC roster to watch than Michel Pereira. And I think Nico Price is going to be possibly the best foil for him because I think he's going to keep coming forward. And I think he's going to have to be a bit of a zombie and take three or four strikes in order to close difference and have a bit of a brawl with him or something like that to be able to get something off for himself. But I think Pereira's footwork's so good that I can see him avoiding all of that and just picking him apart.
The other factor in this fight is the cages they've been fighting in through lockdown have been smaller. Now, this is the bigger cage. So this is the main event bigger cage as well. So you've got more space for Pereira to use that movement, more space for him to come in and out and avoid Price just coming forward. So I think it's a tough night for Price, but he's such a tough git that it's a great fight. No matter where they put it, what part of the card it's on, everyone's tuning in for it. So but that's just an interesting factor. Just the size of the cage is now going to be bigger.
Yeah, that's great. I don't think there's been a kind of upcoming fighter that I've been as excited about as Pereira that I never think will be champion. I'm so excited to see him.
Zero chance.
I don't think he's going to be a champion at all. All the other kind of up and coming, you're like, oh, what could he be? But this is the guy's like, can't see him having a belt, but I'll watch him every time they put him out there.
Yeah, shout, good shout.
Right, well, let's move on to, I think this is the headline fight of the prelims, isn't it? And it's Griffin versus Condit.
Yeah.
Just kind of looking through Carlos's record. I don't know how much longer he's going to be in the UFC. What are your thoughts on Carlos Condit?
I think he's a legend and he's been in some of the best fights and brought a style that just was slicker than anything people had seen at the time. Just his fluidity. He felt like a computer game fighter. But he's getting on. He's not had the best. He's had ups and downs.
Well, he's done a grappling bout this year.
He beat Matt Brown this year, didn't he?
He did beat Matt Brown at the beginning of the year. Right, and he fought Jake Ellenberger in a grappling bout. And then, obviously, at the end of last year, he beat Colt McGee. But up until then, five back-to-back losses, Chiesa Oliveira, Magny, Meyer and Robbie Lawler.
They're good people to lose to, though, aren't they?
They are top guys. Other than maybe Alex Oliveira, you're talking about Woodley probably just before he was champion, on the rise. Lawler for the belt when he was an absolute killer, winning Fight of the Year and stuff like that. And then you just mentioned Magny, who we know is like a gatekeeper for the top five. He's been in that top 10 for ages. And then who was the other one you mentioned?
Meyer.
Chiesa. And Meyer. Oh, Chiesa and Meyer. So, and again, Meyer probably a few years back, so not the kind of Meyer we see today. And Chiesa's become, you know, a top six, top five welterweight, you know. So, I mean, as Pip says, these are no mugs to lose to. Condit's not got any bad losses on his record, really. So, and Max Griffin is not the caliber of fighter of all those people when they beat Condit. I mean, you could maybe say Max Griffin beats Woodley now, or, you know, beats Meyer now, but back then there's no way.
Yeah.
And so that is a big factor and a big difference. But Max Griffin, I mean, did you see what he did to, is it Brahimaj?
Ramiz
Brahimaj. Oh my God, his ear just came off basically from an elbow. It was just flopping around. I rewatched that earlier today. And I kind of forgot about it, to be honest. Mm. And I watched it, and as soon as I saw that ear flopping around, I literally was like, oh, oh my God, oh no!
Stop it!
Is it?
It's the bit where he's against the cage and he gets punched and it wobbles like that, and even he goes, what was that? And he puts his hand in his ear. And the referee's still looking like that, and you're like, no, stop. And then when Griffin steps back, Griffin says, oh my God.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's like, oh my God, I did that.
Oh, amazing. Well,
it was an elbow, wasn't it, that done it?
I think so. It was an elbow, but it was a right hook beforehand. So I watched it again today, and it was the right hook that wobbled him against it. Then he got him against the cage. So I actually think he burst it and then tore it. But it's the joys of cauliflowers. But it was quite literally hanging on by a thread. And then Dominic Cruz, I think, says something. He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, we don't play fighting." Like that. He says something just like, "This is a real deal." Like, he takes it right down, and everyone's just going, "What the? Screenshot that! Send that on the WhatsApp group." God. It's mad.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, I guess before we move on to the main card, because we've still got so much to talk about, and we're talking about commentators there, Dominic Cruz. Brian, am I right in saying that you've had a quick jaunt to Russia?
I've been to Russia, been to Sochi, mate. Yes, I just bounced to Sochi last week with Mr. Pickett, which was, it was awesome.
How was that then?
It was good. Sochi is like their Marbella. So it's, if you can imagine, very stern Russian blokes walking around in speedos. That was my entire week.
Oh, don't mind if I do.
I will send you the shots. But it was awesome. It was just nice to get back out there. We were on the FSB list, so they let us straight in. So that's great to know.
Amazing.
But apart from that, no, it was good. It's just good to get back out and get back in there. Yeah, travel again for some of these fights, which is awesome.
And you was calling fights, yeah?
Yeah, called some fights. Got to roll on a rooftop with Mr. Pickett for the first time in 2 years nearly. So, because I've got a knee injury, lads. I don't know if you know about this. I've got a ACL and MCL. I don't know if anyone
else. Housemate's knee?
That's not what,
mate. Housemate's knee?
Look at you getting in first.
Nothing as serious as that. Just tore my MCL and ACL wrestling, mate. How did you do yours?
Well, lucky you, because that housemaid's knee is no joke, mate. I've been having to have like half a teaspoon of turmeric every morning in my apple juice. It's serious stuff, that housemaid's knee. So the struggle is real.
It's worrying though, because somebody who rose to stardom so young with the BBC. Now having an issue caused by spending a lot of time on your knees. It's really worrying. Oh, I can't edit that out.
Brilliant.
What was quite funny was on our little WhatsApp group we've got, when I accidentally let it slip that Blake had a knee condition called housemaid's knee, there was some incredibly high-level bants thrown at Blake, and I think it all happened one night, and it all went a bit quiet. You didn't respond, and I remember waking up the next morning thinking, "Oh no, is he a little bit offended?" By this?
I was early in that group as well, so you don't know what the line is. So I was sat there the next morning. It's blue ticked. We've had nothing back. They'll have set up another group talking about whether to kick me out of this group.
Oh dear! Has anyone else got anything they want to say about Condit Griffin? Or are we going to move on to the big hitters and the main card?
Let's
crack on to the main card. I mean, they're all. That's the one thing I would say is all those fights that we've just mentioned are cracking fights. That any of them could get a knockout. Fights could go either way, and all of them are going to be high action, really, really fun fights. So you're in for a treat.
One more thing just quickly to give just Condit some more, his record, some context and some more praise is people have to remember when fighters were fighting in the GSP era, because GSP was just the next level above everyone. Like Condit, if GSP wasn't there, Condit probably would have been the champ at some point at his best. Mm. And there's so many fighters who you can say that for at that weight class that you can kind of go, oh, they were obviously a gatekeeper or whatever. So, no. the level was just that much higher because GSP existed.
And I think at that time as well, he did get a shot against Johnny Hendricks, who, again, at that time, was a fucking killer.
Yeah.
He was knocking people across the octagon when he knocked them out. And I think that was Condit's only other loss that we haven't we haven't brought attention. So, you know, as said, all absolute killers. That
also the great one of the greatest mean mugs in MMA ever. Like his stare downs, his fight faces. It's natural born killer. That's the perfect nickname for him. It's brilliant.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, first card on the main card. First fight on the main card. Even it's a sugar show.
Oh, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because he was supposed to fight Louis Smoker. That's dropped out.
Hell of a matchup that would have been.
And that would have been a great fight and a real test in terms of O'Malley. I mean, you would have favoured O'Malley, but this had more, far more credibility to it than what's happened. And it's really interesting to see how the UFC have played it, because Smoker drops out and every man and his dog that can make 135 was calling for this O'Malley fight. Ricky Simone was one of the big front wallers, I think. Kelleher was maybe calling for it. Merab.
Yeah.
I mean, let's not even bother talking about Merab. There's no way they were going to stick Sean O'Malley in with Merab, and I don't blame them. But Tim Elliott, I think, was talking about popping up to 135.
That's a great fight.
And all of those names would have given a win for O'Malley far more credibility. Instead, they've gone with this guy, Moutinho, who I think has been fighting in a smaller promotion in the New England area. He's not got the best record in the world. And what this does is it kind of makes it, if it wasn't obvious already, it's really obvious now that, to me, the UFC are trying to make O'Malley a star. They're trying to give him the right kind of run-in. And there's nothing necessarily wrong with that, because you're building a star and a brand that will make your company more money later down the line, then it might lead to more interesting fights down the line. But what it also does, the kind of flip of that coin, is I feel like now O'Malley just getting a win isn't good enough. If this guy takes O'Malley to a decision, I think that leaves question marks over O'Malley. And that is maybe unnecessary pressure for a young guy that, you know, he lost to Cheeto a couple of fights back. And I know he's an incredibly confident guy. But if he doesn't put on a real statement in this fight, which is what probably should happen, then people are going to be asking questions and thinking about his legitimacy, and it's going to slow down him getting a ranked opponent and all those things. And I just wonder whether it's a risk worth taking, and if they would have had done a better job if they had have put him in with a winnable fight, yes, but a more recognisable name.
Yeah, agreed. I think that the idea that you're going to, the UFC are telling the world that this guy is the next big thing, he's a killer, blah, 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 then you can't have it both ways. You can't tell everyone and expect everybody to get on board and then give him a fire that they've given him. And I'm not taking nothing away from that opponent, but I think that the Ricky Simon fight would have been much better. I think that would have been a really, really good fight. And I just think that the UFC can't keep, you know, putting these people on pedestals and then just giving them completely, you know, fights that are way beneath them, you know, statistically.
I completely disagree with both of you. And I'll explain why. I would agree on any other card, but you're on a Conor card. And Conor cards bring casuals, and casuals are who they want to build a young star with. Casuals will not know that Ricky Simone is a tougher test than the guy Sean is against here.
We should remember his name, really, because none of us
exactly.
Have said,
I mean, that's what we're all saying.
Moutinho.
That's
his name's Moutinho.
Moutinho.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the point. They'd put him in against Smolka, because, like, either way, you're going to have a wild fight there. They're both, like, Smolka is a warrior. So it would have been an exciting fight. Either he goes out on his sword. Either way, you're getting an exciting card fight on a huge card. But I think everyone who stepped up to challenge, even the ones that you might have said are winnable on a full camp, were a lot more risky of him being smothered, of him being held down. Whereas, again, if it's on the Conor card and he's that loud and mouthy and he's got the look and all of that, you want to Raymond Daniels him. You want to put him in there and watch him do his cool shit and send him on his way. Again, I'd be a lot more critical if it wasn't a replacement. If this was the original opponent,
oh, yeah,
you'd be like, what are they doing? But I think the UFC saw that they can get away with it as such kind of game. Well, it's a last-minute thing. We'll sling someone in there. And I think, yeah, they wanted a guarantee of excitement. They said the Smolka one is a guarantee of excitement. You don't know who's going to win. And this, in their eyes at least, you'd imagine, which is always a dangerous bet. They're thinking, well, Sean can go in and do his thing and we get to get some highlights or something that we can replay just before the main event or whatever else.
Let's hope that don't backfire.
Well, do you know what? It's the perfect point. If you look at all the Conor cards going down the line, they have a method for them. They put on some of the fan favourites and they put rising stars. That is how they build it off the back of the hype train that is Conor McGregor and all that comes with him. And with Sean O'Malley, he's like we're trying to second guess the UFC is so good at this. Like we question all these little decisions that they make here and there, and they know what they can feel when there's some potential in somebody, and they'll invest it because look at what it's done with the likes of Conor, with the likes of Ronda, with John Jones, people that they can put a little bit of push behind, and they get so much back. We are in the world of where they are building entertainment cards. They are building these cards which people will tune in. And the fight, we always talk about the fighters get a certain amount of money, but the UFC absolutely rinse it. We're at UFC 264 and they very rarely pull a wrong punch. They make some mistakes. They make some decisions we might not agree with, but they're winning. The house always wins. And I think with Sean O'Malley, they recognise he's got the package as far as his look, his style, his fighting. So that Almeida fight, was something else. He made Almeida look ordinary. And Almeida is world class. Take that loss away. Yeah. He's a dangerous human being. And he could have finished him in the first round, stepped back, and then finished him, pieced him up all the way through that fight. My only worry with Sean O'Malley is, and this is something where you look at the likes of Dominic Cruz, where you see, we might miss the best of him because he's a brittle fighter. You see that Chito Vera thing, he gets injured, he comes out of fights. So the for me, there's also the pressure of the UFC. They want to make money out of this guy, they want to build him, but whether he will be there, whether he can take the punishment that all these training camps and all these wars give you is another question. So I hope we do get to see the best of him because he's so exciting, he's got everything. But he's one of those sort of stop starts at the minute. But I think you bang on there, Pip. I think that's something I hadn't thought of before. But actually, when you think about the UFC and those casual fans, this is where you get that buy. My mom watches Conor McGregor fight cards. That's how she's casual. She's all right.
Well, the next fight on the card, Aldana versus Kunitskaya. Did I say that one right?
Oh, that was good. I'm actually impressed, mate. I was waiting for that. I was like, he's going to say this wrong. Surely, I doubted you. But no, you came through that with flying colours.
Did you see him mop his brow before? He saw me coming to an end and there was a little bit of this. There's this little bit of rustling. I got this, lad. He's got it up in big letters in front of his screen.
Yeah, he was on mute for that whole bit you were saying at the end there. Right. It looked like he was mumbling something under his breath. Mute. Kunitskaya.
Oh, dear. What are your thoughts on this one, lads?
There's probably a fair amount at stake, particularly for Aldana, in terms of the fact that
she's ranked three, right?
I thought it was 5 and 4. I can't remember which way around I got it, but I mean, either way, they're in the top five, both of them. I think Kunitskaya, I think, has been beaten by. I don't know. Has she been beaten by Nunes before? I'm not sure. But the point is, I think
Cyborg, she got smashed by Cyborg.
Right. Well, but I think she's had a loss recently anyway. Maybe it was Holly Holm or someone like that. I'm not sure. But
she lost to Aspen Ladd.
Aspen Ladd was...
Right, well, I'm getting everything wrong. But the point is, I think that Kunitskaya is not necessarily up for a title shot next, even if she wins this. Aldana, on the other hand, I think if she wins, she could be getting a title shot. Although Aspen Ladd is waiting in the wings. I think she's got a fight booked against Macy Chiazon in a bit. So I think what we might see is a situation where Dana White does his whole, Tuesday's the matchmaking day. I'm not going to talk about, fights on the night and all that stuff if Aldana gets a great decision, a great victory. And then he'll wait to see how Aspen Ladd does. And then depending on who does the better job out of Aspen Ladd and Aldana, that person will probably be getting the next title fight against Nunes. And I think we mentioned this on the show before, Stu, when we've done stuff regarding the 125 division with Valentina Shevchenko. There's something about these divisions that just they can't hold a candle to 115 because the champions are just so far ahead of everyone else. And it makes the fights that are even potential number one contender fights feel slightly inconsequential. Yeah. And you can't get as excited for them because you think, oh, yeah, it's a great match. Oh, well done. You'll be a number one contender, but you'll never win the belt. Because Nunes is so much better than the rest, and Shevchenko is so much better than the rest. If this was a type of fight you'd get at 115, you'd be going, this is great because, you know, 115, you've got Mackenzie Dern, you've got Marina Rodriguez and Joanna and Zhang Wei Li and Rose, obviously, is the champion at the moment. Any of those five people fight each other, and I get excited. I go, I don't know which way this is going to go. If Mackenzie Dern gets Rose to the mat, Mackenzie Dern could win this fight. You know, all these little things that you could see happening. Marina Rodriguez, all these fighters, it's exciting. 115 is one of the best divisions in the UFC, regardless of gender. 135 and 125, there's just such a gulf between the champions that I personally feel like I can't get as excited for these big fights.
I think it's partly what you did there as well is at 115 you can reel off a load of names because there's depth in the divisions, and I think in those divisions at 125 and 35 and 45 outside or whatever, there's not that depth. And
well, 45 is not even a division. If you go on the UFC rankings, it's just a picture of Nunes and blank. There's no names underneath it.
Nunes and
with a pie.
Anyone else we can find to get in there. And that's it. Because of that, there's no time to build contenders because there's no one there. It's like, well, whoever fights, the winner is number one contender because there's not enough people in the divisions. And I think that's the major problem there. And it's tough.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's really tough.
I was going to say, for me, it's, and this is not supposed to be disrespectful whatsoever, it's quite a weird fight to have on the main card of this card.
Or Brian, what you were saying earlier about how they build the Conor cards is they also, and I think it's really good, they also always try and put a women's MMA fight on there somewhere. Yeah. And it's just tough because you're not going to want to put a title fight in there because it's a Conor card that he gets the main event. And as I said, those divisions are thin, and it's a younger sport. Women's MMA is a younger sport, so obviously there isn't going to be as deep a pool. Ronda really blew it up and inspired a lot of the young girls who are coming up now. Will often say, "I got into MMA because of Ronda." So we're a few years off having that depth. So it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't. I kind of saw this fight on there and thought, "Oh, all right," but then also thought, I'm glad there's a women's fight. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
just the it's a weird balance there.
And in terms of it being like a potential number one contender fight, that is probably smart business because you go, oh, who's Nunes fighting now? Oh, Irina Aldana, the one that fought on the Conor card. So in that sense, it is good business.
Yeah, I
get that. I just thought Aldana, because of the loss with Holm, the last fight, and she got totally Holly Holmed, makes it very difficult to pitch that, especially when you see how Holm's been handled. Yana, the one, her last fight was Maya, which was fine. She showed you got some stuff on the ground. Styles-wise, this might be decent because Yana's got that taekwondo background. Aldana, just even on the front foot, just couldn't get anything off against Holly Holm, though. So maybe there's a bit of magic in the air as far as the matchmaking, and they see something that I don't, which often they do. But yeah, it's great. It's a great fight to have as far as getting some ladies on the main card. But as far as exactly what you boys have said, what it does next for the divisions is very difficult to see.
Okay, next on, Tai Tuivasa versus Greg Hardy. I mean,
what's after that, Stu? sorry, I'm not a Hardy fan.
Yeah, I mean, I think the crowd make their thoughts on Hardy quite audible every time he steps in the octagon, don't they? And
the thing that makes it really tough is because he's hated, because of his domestic abuse history. Mm. It's the Mayweather thing of people tuning to watch him getting knocked out. And he's slowly getting better, you know. But if you're tuning in, you're tuning in. Yeah, it's a tough one here. I love Tuivasa, though. He's a good lad, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, it is really hero. It's hero versus villain, isn't it? It's a guy that's been convicted of some really nasty stuff. And it's a guy that drinks beer out of his shoe. So it's hero versus villain stuff here, isn't it?
One of my favourite things was Ty being on the fight, on the card just as the pandemic broke out, winning and trying to get a shoe off someone.
Yes.
Who'd been like, there's a pandemic, what are you doing? He's like, can't give it. He's like, no, you're not getting a shoe off someone to drink. We're not going that far.
And wasn't it in like a Muslim country as well? And he's like looking around for a beer. He's like, mate, I don't think they're going to broadcast this.
Dry country in a pandemic. And he's like, come on, guys. Give me a beer and a shoe.
Give me a beer.
How many people are you offending?
Oh, dear.
But he's still, again, a lovable guy.
But you could play a drinking game along with his drinking, which is that every time, because the commentators mention it so often. Yeah. So often, get him a shoe, grab him a shoe, get him a shoe. He needs a shoe. You're going to have a shoe. You watch how many times they mention it, especially in a post-fight interview. Even he's getting a little tired of it, I think.
But, How do we see this one going? Still kind of smirking, waiting for him to do it. Go on, do it, go on. You're going to get a shoe. All right. Chill out, guys.
All right, mate.
Well, they've both lost to good guys, haven't they? I mean, like even at Hardy, you're looking at Tybura, who's on like a 5-fight win streak and has just made his way into the rankings as well. Volkov, who's obviously right up there in like the top five. Mm-hmm. And then Bam Bam's lost to like JDS, Ivanov, Spivak. So again, no mugs necessarily, but I mean, I worry mostly for Bam Bam in terms of size. I think even though they're both heavyweights and they'll probably tip the scales at like 265 or whatever it is, Greg Hardy has nearly missed weight as a heavyweight on a couple of occasions. Yeah. And you just look at him, you're like, he's massive. Like, I think you'll be surprised at how big he'll look in comparison to Bam Bam. Like, Bam Bam is someone that looks soft and if he went on a diet could actually like make 205 maybe even, if he really dieted down and made some big changes in his life. Greg Hardy is just, as you said, he's dense. He's just
giant.
And
he's
but the one thing I would say about him is he tires. He does get tired. And I think if Bam Bam can throw some leg kicks, can keep on away from the punches a bit and kind of move around a bit and use a little bit of speed, because I think he might have a speed advantage in this, then if he can make it to the second round, I think he might really have a chance. But I think in that first round, Hardy's hands are like trucks coming towards you, and you got to be careful.
Where are they fighting? Are inhalers allowed in this event? Or are they
IV drips? The rules? You can have respiratory. But the Greg Hardy one, the last one against Tabora, he was winning that fight. He was winning that fight. He won the first round handily, beat up Tabora, which says a lot because Tabora is good. And then when he got to the mat, he showed a big hole in his game. Even though he was close to the cage, had no idea how to get back to it to try and get back to his feet. And like you said, just tired. He just tired. The thing is, though, with Ty, he'll stand there and bang with him. That's what he'll want to do. And he looked great in his last fight. He's started training at out in Dubai. He's working with Gokhan Sokhi. And you look at those leg kicks they did in his last fight, they were immense. I thought they were beautiful. And that's what started the end of his last fight. And if he's wise, he'd wrestle and try and tire or even just make it a bit dirty inside. So there's a lot of leaning on each other against Greg Hardy. Try and get him tired. But I've got a feeling they're going to stand and bang. And I actually think Greg Hardy, for all of his faults, he learns very, very quickly. He is an athlete. Mm. He's one of these people that every time you see him, he's got a bit. No way he should have fought Volkov at this stage of his career. Mm. Yeah, and lasted. And then, so he's getting better. And if he had more of a gas tank, I think he would have beaten Ty Boyd. And he finished him in the first round. But yeah, you got to love Ty. Ty is the people's champion this one. Yeah, we want some. Yeah, he really is.
Okay. Two fights left on the card. What's next? Burns Wonderboy.
Oh, this is an interesting one, isn't it?
I love it.
Magic. It's
magic. Magic.
So, I mean,
we won't talk about it. We'll stay quiet.
Well, so main event. Just breathe that in. Breathe it in.
Distance and just imagine it for a while. Let's just give us all a minute. All have a second.
I'm going to take this opportunity to apologise for getting Kunitskaya and Aldana's records quite badly mixed up. But I will move on to Thompson and Burns. And I mean, the thing is, there's loads at stake for Wonderboy, isn't there? Because if he puts on a show here, I do think he probably needs a finish. We've had Dana White saying on numerous occasions, oh, Colby's getting the shot. Colby's getting the shot. As far as I'm aware, nothing has been signed yet. And I don't think that that's an accident. Right. And I don't think it's a negotiation problem. I think
Diaz is getting the shot.
Well, there's always that. I'm sure Usman would like that. That is easy money for Usman, I think. But Wonderboy, if he puts on a show here, if he was able to knock out Gilbert Burns, I think he gets the shot. He's someone that Usman hasn't fought yet. I think it's a big name for Usman. It's a really big challenge for him. And Wonderboy's not getting any younger, and he's a fan favourite. And I really think if he wins this fight well, he leapfrogs Leon and he leapfrogs Colby. And I hate that because I want to see Leon get that shot. 9 or 10 fight win streak, however you want to say it. He has put in the time to earn that shot. But Wonderboy's got a claim. He's fought probably the tougher competition overall in, you know, beating Jeff Neal, beating Vicente Luque recently. And then if he beats Burns, then that really does do a lot for him, I think. So a lot's on the line for Wonderboy there. If Burns can get him to the ground, though, he's in for a world of pain, right?
But it feels like Burns is falling in love with his striking a little bit. In recent times, and rightfully so, his boxing has got really good. But yeah, I think Wonderboy is the biggest threat for Usman out of the people, you know, in the running. We've already seen the Colby fight. Leon is amazing, but again, he's not shown it in his moments where he's needed to. And I think styles make matchups, and I think Wonderboy Usman is kind of similar to Ronda Holly Holm. And again, it annoys me that there's a narrative that MMA caught up with Ronda. I don't think it's that at all. I think styles make matchups. If MMA caught up with Ronda, then Holly wouldn't have lost the belt to someone that Ronda had beaten comfortably several times. And Nunes wouldn't have had her only loss to someone that Ronda had beaten in under six seconds. I think styles make matchups. And Usman is a pressure fighter, and Wonderboy is a counter striker. He loves it if someone else closes the distance. The same with Holly Holm. Holly hadn't looked impressive in the UFC, but Ronda was going to close that distance for her. And the times that Wonderboy has had matches that he's been criticised for, it's when it's people who sit back and wait for an opening as well. Woodley is the prime example, particularly in recent years, of waiting. I mean, with Woodley waiting for Prince Charles to come and cut a ribbon at the fucking opening, but still just sitting back and waiting for openings. But Usman wouldn't allow that, and I don't think Burns will allow that either. Burns, in this beautiful part of his career, has been outworking everyone. He's been going in there as the underdog and going, no, I'm going to work harder, I'm going to win. And I think, yeah, that's the perfect matchup for Wonderboy, and as a preparation for Usman. As a, if you're going to beat someone that will make the brass think you've got a chance against Usman, then Burns or or Covington are the two guys to beat in that world that will make you go, all right, there's a chance there.
Burns has brought in Raymond Daniels, though. Did you know this? For his striking, which I was watching the countdown thing, and it was because Daniels and Wonder Boy fought. I think I didn't see that fight, but I think Wonder Boy injured his ankle or something during it. But I was watching this, and Burns is a student. Like, he's become a world champion in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Yeah. He put himself right into the fight. I know people that train with him that go out there and spend time with him, and they say such nice things about him. Like, he's one of the hardest workers. He'll go out of his way to help every single person in the gym. He's not one of these that thinks I've got a status or anything else. And he's a very... He's somebody that will put in the work. He's somebody that won't leave those stones unturned. And the fact he's brought in Raymond Daniels is interesting for me. Even the small shots he saw in the countdown show, where he's looking at how to cut angles, how not to get blitzed, how to counter those, and how to bring it into his world. It's fascinating, especially with that little touch on top. Because it's a tough fight. It's a big fight for him as well. He got finished by Usman. If he gets finished by Burns, that's it. He's moved up in a weight class to make this charge at the title. He's got that world champion mindset because he's achieved it in other sports before. That'll be devastating for him. And I think that is what's motivating him as far as every single day. And then you flip across, there was a wonderful bit in the countdown show for Wonder Boy. He just makes me happy. You see him on there and he's teaching the kids class and he's got all the kids and they're spinning sticks and they're doing all this. And then he says, hands up, who's going to kick someone in the head? And so they all put their, all these 7-year-olds put their, and then it shows sparring with like 5 to 7-year-olds. That's a kick in the head. Yeah. And you're like, it shouldn't be that much fun watching kids kick each other. But when Wonder Boy is asking your kid to kick, you're like, yeah, that's a good thing. It's just, he emanates this positivity. So it's a great fight. And I think Wonder Boy, he'll probably line up with the shot if he gets it. But I think there's something about Burns in this one as well. I think this is going to be this is a really exciting fight, especially for the co-main.
Yeah, I mean, well, the other thing to just talk about, I guess, is what are either of their chins that good? Like, could we see either of them going to it? Because you look at Wonder Boy.
Yeah,
I mean, he took some big shots from Woodley, but Pettis knocked him out. And then you look at Gilbert Burns. I mean, Usman, I think, hits very hard. I think Usman hits very hard. But then Gilbert Burns, his best wins are at welterweight anyway, are Maia, who we all know is not the man he was, and Woodley, post Usman, who again is not the man he was. So this is probably the biggest test other than Usman that Gilbert's had. And he fell short at the Usman one. The Raymond Daniels wrinkle is very, very interesting to see how much he can pick up in a short period of time to negate Wonderboy's very unique style. But when you look at their resumes, Wonderboy, I feel like, has fought the who's who and more often than not come out on top. And Burns...
Or argued, like with the Till fight, where a lot of people thought Wonderboy won, with the Woodley 100%. Fight, a lot of people, the one that was a draw, a lot of people think Wonderboy won. So there's a lot there where even his record is a deceptive on how he's done against these monsters.
Absolutely. And his defensive wrestling is so good, Wonderboy. He very rarely gets taken down. So you kind of think Gilbert's best chance is to have learned something from Raymond Daniels, where he can get some kind of step off and hook or whatever it is that he can do to land a bit of power. Wonderboy's wobbled and then he can get him to the floor. Other than that, I can see Wonderboy getting a decision here relatively comfortably.
I think that's a great shout. I think this fight will be decided on the feet because Wonderboy has got such good reach and good footwork. He's just not there. So even if it is a submission, you do feel that it will come from Gilbert catching him at some point and getting him down rather than, again, it's not an Usman style double leg charge kind of power thing. That's not Gilbert's style anyway. So yeah, I think that's a great shout.
You talk about, you know, what's Wonderboy's chin like? And you're looking through his card here. the only person that stopped him, like the KO did, was that Superman punch from Pettis. Yeah. Like, yeah. All of his other losses are decisions.
And he was winning that one as well, again.
Yeah. Was, yeah.
Not to keep going on about his deceptive record. He was looking amazing in that. Mm. And then out of nowhere, he's on the floor.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. And he has been in with some absolute beasts as well. Yeah. It's a great fight to get us warmed up for what we're going to talk about now. And, well, where are we going with this? Conor Poirier, 3.
It is.
Well, I mean, do we want to breathe that one in as well? What happened there?
I thought you were going to start, Stu.
We're all too conscious of jumping in because all of us get excited. Yeah. Every time Stu knows I come off of this going, I didn't speak over people too much, did I? I didn't get in anyone's way. Every time I come off, because I'm just excited to talk
about. Take your shirt off and shut up. That's what we want you to hear.
I know. Bit of eye candy. The first message I get from Pip will be like, did I look bigger than Brian?
Could you see my tats?
But all that aside, one thing I think is interesting with this is it feels like a rematch rather than a third part, because the first two were so far apart and the last one didn't feel like a rematch. It felt like two different fighters. This feels like a traditional rematch. They've had their fight, we've seen the winner, now we're seeing it again. Can they make the adjustments? And the typical thing that you always kind of hear is that it's harder for the winner to make adjustments than it is for the loser, because the loser knows what he did wrong and what he has to change. The winner did everything right, therefore doesn't know what is going to be different next time. So, yeah, it's a fascinating one.
I watched it back today, the second one, and it's so technically good, that fight.
Yeah.
And the difference was those legs, and it was even maybe just that. I know there was a culminative set of leg kicks that built up to maybe the final, but that the one that just before he ended up with his back against the cage and that flurry of punches finished Conor McGregor. Before that, there's some wonderful exchanges. Conor's finding angles. He's using range well. Poirier, you see him growing confidence. He takes a straight left in the first round, and you kind of see him settle a little, because I think he's probably scared of that power punch coming through. And when you look at it just technique-wise, they are, and it's a stupid thing to say when you look at their records, how long they've been around, who they've fought, but technically it's such a beautiful matchup. Striking-wise, just mentality-wise, what they both bring to the fight. And it surprised me. I half remembered it as Poirier almost steamrolling Conor McGregor. But when I watched it back, I was like, oh, hang on a minute. There are moments here where McGregor really did catch him and really could have maybe captured him.
I thought so. I remember thinking he looked decent, at least in the first round. And then the memory seems to be that he just got destroyed.
I thought like the things that I loved about Conor was I liked it when he fought that kind of low slung sort of stance. I really liked that. But we'll get onto that in a bit. But I thought, you know, the things that really made him spectacular was how precise he was with his hands and the speed. And I thought both of them were off in that second Poirier fight. I didn't think the speed was where it was, and I didn't think he was throwing shots a lot and missing, whereas he never used to waste shots like that. And I know we had Kenny Florian, when we asked him how he thought that was going to go, he was like, his thoughts were that if Conor turns up and uses all of his skills in that style that we saw him sort of rage through the whole division, you know, in that stance, he reckons he'll get the win. But I think turns up in that boxing style and wants to box Poirier, I don't think that's a good shot.
Well, that's one of the things that's fascinating, is the big talk is he going to be able to figure out the leg kicks. Conor's original style was the solution for leg kicks, in that He's in and out. The best way to deal with a leg kick is to not be there for it. Mm. And that was his style that he came up with, was being out of range and just bursting in and bursting and giving them trouble. So it's a weird one. He's got the solution to leg kicks if he wants to use it. But I think the reason he stepped away from that is the thing that Conor is criticised for the most is his cardio. Mm. And that bouncy in and out style is knackering on your cardio. And in the early days, when the, I always loved the Eddie Alvarez used to say it, I remember in one of the pre-fights of his in Bellator, they were like saying, are you ready for it's a title match, five rounds. He's like, oh no, I only ever a train for one round. I plan on going in there and finishing it and getting out. Other than that, we'll do what we can. And I love that about Eddie, but I think Conor maybe tried to adapt too much to, I want more cardio, I want this and I want that. And yeah, I don't know. It's a tough one.
There was a thing after the fight, after the Dustin Poirier one, there was a, I don't know if it was an interview or it was just a quote or he put it up on Instagram or something, but he was analysing, it was on Instagram, as he put something out where he said, I've watched it back a couple of times. I know the mistakes I've made. He said, I need to go back. I need to go back to where I was hungry, where I was the guy before all this happened. I need to go back to training with my things. You know, the whole thing of where he was eating a punnet of blueberries on Ariel Helwani's show when he first sort of came to the scene. And I was thinking, he needs to be uncomfortable. That's what he's saying. He needs to be in this place. And I was like, that's awesome. Let's watch. That'd be amazing. That's like a Rocky thing to watch. And the next shot is him building his own gym in California or something. Bentleys and all this. Yeah, really uncomfortable, mate. You put yourself right out there, haven't you? You've really embraced the pain.
Well, he said being away from his kids and family will help, because I can't remember the exact quote, but he was saying, like, it's really hard to basically step into the cage with that kind of killer instinct when you're going home and reading bedtime stories.
Being
dad and stuff like that. So I think he's kind of removed that for the camp, and he has just gone and just had the people around him that are going to help him train. And it all sounds good. I worry that, you know, as far as I'm concerned, prime Conor McGregor beats a prime Dustin Poirier. I think the problem at the moment is that we've got probably a prime Dustin Poirier fighting definitely not a prime Conor McGregor. Will he in 5 months got the? You're saying he already had the answers to those leg kicks. Whether the kind of forays into boxing have changed his style too much, can he get back into it? You would hope so. Mm. I'd definitely like to see him, like Kenny Florian was saying, just use more of his arsenal, use more of those kicks. Do you remember against Dennis Seaver? He seemed to do the touch of gloves and almost quite bad sportingly went straight to a spinning back kick to the body after like a split second after touching gloves. And you're like, I want to see that guy. In the first Poirier fight, the first thing he threw was like a spinning back kick to the body. It just makes you go, oh, this guy has got everything. And at the moment, I feel like Poirier's probably going into this fight going, he's going to be able to avoid some of the leg kicks, but I still think I'll be able to get a few of those leg kicks in. It's going to be incredibly damaging for him. It takes away his movement. It takes away his pop on his punches. I mean, that first fight, I think Conor won that first round. I think, but what's really interesting about it, on the scorecards, Conor won the first round for me. But as he was walking back to his corner, I went, there's only one way this fight's going, and it's to Dustin. Because he looked gassed, and it looked like the leg had been damaged. So even though he'd landed the more impactful strikes and been more not lethal, but definitely caused more damage, I think, in terms of head and body and all that stuff, I think it was so clear that the long-term damage had been done to Conor's leg by that point, and that there was only one way the fight was going, and it was to Dustin. It's going to be really interesting to see if Conor can negate that enough.
I got a question for you. Do you think...
Go on.
Some of the mystique or the effect he has on fighters has been lost because he doesn't do all these build-ups, all these press conferences anymore. There's many fights, even on the Dustin Poirier one, when he talks about that first fight, where Dustin said, I've never felt that angry. I've never been that emotionally invested. He did that to Diego Brandão in the sparring and the open workouts. He turned up when Brandão was still there and he was talking to him through the cage, and he said, I knew he was broken then. Aldo, 15 months of beating down this guy mentally to make him fight not like Aldo. He came out and he got caught. Diaz as well, back of Diaz is impervious to it. Eddie Alvarez, another one that sort of crumbled with the hype, the magnitude of what he brings before you even step in the cage. We don't get that anymore. We don't get the...
That Alvarez fight was when you saw his speed and precision at his best. He didn't waste 100%. One shot. Every shot he threw was on the money. It was unbelievable what he'd done in that fight.
You know what, though, Brian? I think the fighter that talk has had the biggest effect on in Conor's career is Conor. He spends 15 months telling everyone he's the best in the world, and he convinces himself. And I think there has been points in the more recent Conor that he hasn't looked as confident, as comfortable. And again, I think part of that, I think you could be right. If he's not out there on camera every week saying, I'm going to destroy and I'm going to finish him in this round, I'm the best. He's instead at home going, was I as good in practice this week? Or was I a bit slow? Like, am I struggling on the cross trainer or this or that? Do you know what I mean? Am I who I once was? So, yeah.
You've also got to think as well at this point, like, you know, when we saw him fight Cerrone and he was, you know, Mr. Humble and very respectful and stuff like that. This was off the back of him being a real fucking douche outside the octagon. You know, we saw him jump in with Goddard and give him a load of grief. All the stuff with the bus, you know, he was punching old people apparently in bars, you know, with the thing in Ireland. There was lots of really horrible stuff and more that was going on. And maybe he does just think, am I going to absolutely ruin everything if I keep gobbing off? Do I wind my neck in a little bit? And I don't know. And maybe if that's what he's done, maybe that has kind of, you know, got into his head that he isn't the greatest, you know, and he's only got a...
Oh, that's all something I was going to ask as well, because I'm not... I think Conor is maybe one of the most underrated fighters, which sounds crazy, but because as we've touched upon, his technical ability gets so overlooked. But equally, I'm not particularly a Conor fan anymore. And it's because of all of his stuff he's done outside, the way he's acted, the way he's held himself in recent years. Do you think that's started to come home to roost? Because I don't know about you guys, but it's Monday as we're recording this. It doesn't feel like a Conor McGregor fight week.
No, mate.
It doesn't feel anywhere near what it has felt at other times. Even the Cowboy one, you know, which was a smaller thing and it, all this. But I wonder if it's the character of Conor has worn people out, or if it's his performances, or seeing cracks in his armour, or something else. It could be the amount of UFCs that are on at the moment. There's one, they're kind of constant. You need to get that one out of the way before you can start getting excited. But yeah, for me, I don't know, it doesn't feel like your traditional Conor fight week, particularly in a trilogy that's 1-1 with against the guy who was offered the title shot and chose Conor instead. So you would argue the best guy in the division. There's so much there that means it should be huge, but it doesn't feel as big.
I think both yours and Brian's questions are linked. I think the mystique has mainly gone because he's been beaten. And there's only so many times you can talk the way Conor does and get beat. It was okay for him to do a world tour with Mayweather, get beat by Mayweather and carry on. Because it was Mayweather in a boxing match. You were a legend for even doing that and going the 10 rounds. And the ref stopped it, a lot of Conor fans would argue, and I'd maybe argue this myself, not because he was knocked out on the feet, but because he was gassing out and looked so bad. The ref could have let that go on. I think it would have probably led to a Mayweather knockout, but the ref could have let that go on. And then he comes back and fights Khabib, has one of the darkest press conferences, if not the darkest press conference we've ever seen inside the UFC, some of the stuff that was being said and done around that. And he got beat. And he got beat comfortably. But you had the excuse of, like, I remember leading up to that fight, it looked like he was drinking loads. He didn't look like himself. I remember talking to mates being like, you watching this press conference? Conor's
drinking. He's got
Conor's
whiskey.
Looking like himself. He's just drinking, and he doesn't see. He seems to be overplaying everything because he didn't have the laid back confidence where he would give it to you and tell you some home truths and you're stuck in the mud and I'd snap you in half and all this stuff. He was shouting other stuff, and it just seemed to come from a place of potential insecurity. And then he lost. And then he had like quite a lot of time off, and then he ends up fighting Cerrone, which, you know, Cerrone was kind of handpicked, wasn't he, at the end of the day? And we know that Connor is lethal in round one, and Cerrone is not very good in round one. It was still a fight that needed to happen and all that. But then again, after Cerrone, a big layoff before then going from Donald Cerrone to arguably the best lightweight in the world outside of Khabib in Poirier. And I think then getting knocked out properly for the first time against Poirier means that, yes, a lot of that mystique has gone. Fighters now will be chomping at the bit, champing at the bit. We have this argument all the time, Stu. We're not saying choking at the bit, though, to fight Conor McGregor. And so, yes, the mystique has gone there. But also, is Conor going, fuck, I got properly knocked out in the last fight. It's one thing to lose a fight and me go, oh, he shot on me. Or, oh, I was fighting the boxer and the ref stepped in early. Or, you know, whatever. Or I was choked out and all that kind of stuff. That's one thing. Getting knocked out completely and laid on your ass and having memes going around with people photoshopping bottles in your hand and all that kind of stuff as you're laying on the canvas. That's damaging to the brand. It's damaging to the revenues you can create. And I wonder if now he's going, I am just going to isolate myself and really take myself back to the old Connor, or do the best I can to do that, leave no stone unturned, and just fight and just focus on fighting. Because if he loses this, the really interesting question is, where does he go from here? Because I do think he's still probably the biggest draw in the UFC. The Nate trilogy is probably the biggest fight that could possibly be made. There's fights with Masvidal, which I don't know whether I would favour him in that fight. Dana's said that Masvidal's too big for him, but in terms of making money, that's a huge fight. Conor's got no shortage of making big, big fights, but his legitimacy will deteriorate massively.
It's whether he wants to be GSP or Chael Sonnen. And I love both of them. And they're two of the biggest pay-per-view buys in history. Until Conor started taking everyone's records, it was GSP, it was Chael, and it was Brock in there as well. But Chael is remembered for being Chael, for being a character. He wasn't this champion. Does he want to be champ, or does he want to be Red Panty Knight? And that's what's going to be decided in this fight, really. Is it just he goes on in this era, as you guys have spoken about before, of annoyance, in this era of money fights, of the Paul brothers and all these other things, does he just become that and just become a guy that it's big money to fight him, it doesn't really mean anything? Or does he want to go and try and push on to being the guy who was the first to have both belts and to do all this amazing stuff? It's on the line.
Well, one of the things that I want to pick up on that Blake said, and I want to throw in our mutual friend, something that Brad Pickett said to us once when I interviewed him a few years ago. And he said, you know, as a fighter that was a confident fighter that wanted to throw his hands and wanted to get stuck in, I think Brad said, like, after he got knocked out, it changed the way that he went into fights. All of a sudden, he didn't have that super confidence that I can take one to give one, but starting to fight a little bit more cautiously. I think I'm speaking
100%. Yeah. He talks to us about fighters. Yeah. He said that changed, that Almeida fight changed him completely.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the way that, you know, that last Conor fight ended, he knows that's a possibility. He knows that Dustin's got that power, and he knows that, you know, his chin doesn't want that, and that's got to be rattling around in his head 100%. That's got to put a chink in your confidence.
We've talked a lot about Conor, but the Dustin side of it as well, I thought that he deserves so much credit for that performance and that finish in particular. That final, first of all, picking those shots for the leg kicks were immense, but the final flurry in which he finished Conor, if you slow that down, that is absolutely supreme MMA striking. He's picking angles. He's hurting Conor. Conor's throwing back. He's completely switched on. He's not wild with what he's doing. And I think you're right. I don't think Conor, he's never been under that pressure in striking before. And the other thing that he took away that he talked about was, and this is the strange thing, and maybe when you look at his record, because I think he's only fought like six times in MMA since 2016, and Dustin's almost, I think it's 9 or 10 he's had in that amount of time. Connor said, I've never felt those leg kicks, which is a crazy thing to say, because I know they've kind of skyrocketed in the last few years. But for him to actually like comment, and he made a couple of comments, I've never felt that. And that's strange, because the sport moves so quick. So quick. Yeah. You look at what the UFC posted this week. They posted the 10-year of Carwin Lesnar. And you jump back to watching that, and it feels like the Stone Ages. You watch and you realise how much has moved technically, how much has moved on.
I mean, they do both look like cavemen, so that's kind of influenced it. It's slightly, that's kind of made it feel like that.
But I think Dustin is like you say, you've got that phrase, paid in full. He has grown with the sport. You look back, and there's a beautiful document. I posted it in our group where he sits and watches his.
It was fantastic.
And he goes through his whole era.
Going through fight by fight.
Unbelievable. Yeah. And you see him from a young, like a real young rookie. And even when he's talking about his striking, you see him throwing punches, and it's technically, it's not where he is now. And then you see how he's grown, who he's fought, what he's overcome, the family side of him as well. He's got his wife behind him the whole way since he was 16 years old, and they first met, and then they get married, and they've built this whole together. And he's been in the sport. He's moved with the sport. He is phenomenal. Whereas I think McGregor's gaps, and just that caught my ear, just for him to say, that's the first, I've never felt something like that. I think that is interesting, and probably a sign of how quick the sport moves.
It's an interesting one, because there's nothing I love more than watching a fighter reach what we think is their limit and then adjust and improve. And we've seen that with Dustin. We've seen it with numerous. RDA comes to mind as one who seemed like he was going to be in the middle and then went, here's my adjustment.
Charles Oliveira as well, who's probably awaiting the winner of this fight as well.
Boom. Yeah.
Perfect example. But despite me loving that, it always leaves in the back of my head a belief that they're beatable. Because we've seen them be beaten. And I don't know, it makes you feel they're not this elite, like you think of a Conor McGregor as this thing that I know he has lost, but on that rise, you were like, who is going to figure out this guy? Dustin never had that until he was going up against, or until a few fights before he was going up against Khabib, really. You were always like, yeah, he might win, he might lose. He was never really that. It's all on Dustin, I'm confident. You're like, yeah.
Even in
beatable.
Those fights, though, you see so many like holes or avenues. That, but Gaethje, you think he could have won that fight. Alvarez, you think he could have won that fight.
Yeah.
Dan Hooker, another one. But he could have won that fight.
But that's the thing that I think is key in this. And I've been thinking about this. I think cardio is overrated. But let me explain.
Stop it there. Pause.
No, wait.
Stu, clip this, Stu.
I think what we think of as cardio is arguably the most important thing in MMA. But Dustin, we've seen Dustin get exhausted but not accept it, because he's got that grit, he's got that mentality. It's not necessarily about his heel sprints, his running machine. We've seen him breathing out of his mouth heavily, exhausted. We've seen his eyes roll at points where someone's got up from a takedown and he's exhausted, but he won't accept tiredness. And I think that is the cardio that sets people apart. It's those fighters who go, yeah, I'm as knackered as you are, but I ain't stopping. And Conor hasn't necessarily shown that.
Pip, are you suggesting that Conor McGregor is mentally weak? Is that...
To quote
Scroobius Pip, Conor McGregor is mentally weak. That's what I heard.
100%. He threw a fucking thing at
a bus
because he was angry. Someone said they were going to beat up his mate, so he got on a plane and threw a little trolley at a bus. You can't get more mentally weak than that. This is the fight game. This is Mr. Smack Talk. What'd you say to my mate? Book a ticket, I'm coming.
Lob off, I'm on my way. That's it.
Exactly. But I think there's an element of that. I think what Conor and Dustin share massively is they've got great fight IQs.
Yeah.
So regardless of them, because again, like we're joking about it, but in the Diaz fight, in the Khabib fight and in the... I'll tell you what it is, actually. Connor needs to convince himself again. He's mentally weak until he gets into his own ear. In Mayweather, we saw him get tired, but then we saw him get a bit better again before it was finished. We saw the same in the Khabib fight. The whole, he won a round. He won a round. It wasn't the first round. It wasn't the second. So I think he's got a... I think he needs to convince himself. I think, whereas with Dustin, it's from the start. It's like, no, I ain't quitting. I think Connor is more, am I quitting? No, I'm not. But he has that moment of wondering, I guess. Mm. It's tough.
Well, we'll find out at a weekend. Anything else to add to this?
How mad is it that this isn't the title fight in that division?
I know, it's crazy.
How mad is it that the winner gets to fight Oliveira and people will be like, oh, I don't fancy Oliveira's chance. Like, however this goes, you're gonna. It'll be arguable that they're the best in this division.
Yeah, but I mean, and that again is interesting as where things go from here, because Dustin's shown that he can prioritise money over the belt. Mm-hmm. As much as I didn't think that a while back. I thought Dustin was all about the belt. But I tell you what would be really interesting is if someone says to him, you could fight Charles Oliveira for the belt, because obviously that's, you know, that's the belt. That's great. But you've just beat Connor in a trilogy. Do you want to fight Nate Diaz for triple the money you'd fight Charles Oliveira for? At 170, so you don't need to cut any weight either. I think Dustin Poirier go, well, my foundation would do pretty bloody well off of a Nate Diaz fight. So that
I think
could
Dustin
be a
Poirier
really
would go, is the fight decided by the judges or by who Nate thinks won by the end of it? Because if it's who Nate thinks won, I ain't going in there. I ain't taking that L.
But I tell you what, that's a fight as well. I mean, they were booked to fight before. It got cancelled. Yeah. I mean, that's a really interesting one, that whether Dustin wins or loses, Nate is a fantastic option. And whether Connor wins or loses, Nate's a fantastic option.
Nate is a fantastic option. I think that's a great shout, because, I would have had in my head, if Dustin loses, he's gone out in the money fight. But you're completely right. If he loses... Pair him up with
Look
Nate.
At the response Nate got when he came out. That was ridiculous, his return. That is money. That's,
you know what? This conversation has genuinely made me want Connor to win, because I love the idea of Charles Oliveira, who's been doing it so hard for so long, getting that huge money fight.
Yep.
Defending against Connor, a winnable fight, probably a more winnable fight than the Dustin that we've seen so far.
Yep.
And then Dustin going and smashing up again, fight IQ against Nate. Nate isn't a fight IQ guy. Nate is a fighter. He wants to go in there and scrap. So again, that would be a great
thing. Is, you always say smash up, but you never say finish, do you, when you say Nate Diaz?
No, not necessarily.
You can't finish that Stockton zombie. It's not happening.
Nate Diaz and Amanda Nunes, let's go. Come on, let's get that division sorted out as well. Shevchenko, where are you? Lads, I've got to say one more thing as well. I just want my integrity to be held, because I think Dustin Poirier heard that I was going to be on the thing, and he didn't just send me that. He sent me two boxes of
the Louisiana hot sauce for people that obviously can't see this
hot sauce. Yeah,
And I think he was hoping that I'd just go straight picking. I'm not. You might be paid in full, mate, but you can. There's not enough hot sauce or money in the world, my friend. This is an unbiased podcast, and we stick by our morals. All right.
And we do operate like Connor. We've got your back, Blake. So if Ralph Little starts smack talking you, mate, we will jump on a train and we'll go up north and we will throw a trolley at him, brother. Don't you worry.
At worst, listen, if there's no trolley around, I'll nick a basket from Sainsbury's. All right? Whatever happens, we got you, mate. We got you.
I love the idea of you throwing a basket from Sainsbury's at a bus or something like that.
Or a trolley, but having to knock to get my pound back.
I love the idea of Ralph Little getting the bus to Sainsbury's.
Oh, gentlemen, thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Pleasure as ever, gents.
Thanks so much, guys.
Does anyone want any hot sauce? I literally have got two boxes of hot sauce.